好的，非常说啊，well, Cesar is a bit of an expert on this, much more of an expert than I am. I'm not very sure either. I don't even know what form the exam is going to take in the end. And I don't think, I'm not even sure if the course directors know exactly what form the exam is going to take. For the moment, so that's a bit of a problem. But if I get any concrete information, I will definitely pass it on. But obviously, this depends a little bit on the Ministry of Education and the UNED as much as on the p specific people in charge of the course. So that's a bit of a problem. Okay, well, we have given people their 5 minutes of grace, so they no longer, if they come late, they come late. What I wanted to talk about today, to interrupt just talking about pronunciation the whole time, which could be a little bit boring, I will, after Easter, probably give you another talk about pronunciation and euphony and things like that. But I wanted to talk about the proposition that all language is figurative. So, what do you understand by the word figurative? What does figurative mean? What is the opposite of figurative? Abstract. Interesting. Okay. Any other suggestions? Alberto, do you have anything to add? Abstract is the opposite of figurative, or is the definition of figurative? I imagine you mean a definition of it. What's the opposite of figurative? Ah, okay, right. But I'm talking about language. Yes, I suppose in art, yes, it would be. But not quite the same here. Yes, more or less. Okay, so I mean, the idea in classical linguistics is that language can either be literal, so a thing is a thing, what in English we sometimes say to call a spade a spade. I will give you that expression, to call a spade a spade. Is when when you're talking directly, you're talking frankly, and you're talking literally. Whereas the idea, again, in classical linguistics is that figurative speech involves adorning what you say and beifying it in some sort of sense, while at the same time talking in a way which is less easy to understand. Now that position came under attack from basically the 1960s onwards. Firstly, the idea that figurative language was always beautifying the language was questioned. An example of how this might be, which I was reading about at the weekend, was in this piece of graffiti. Which used to appear in America, in the USA, in the 1960s, or even in fact. In what way is that figurative language, and what is it being implied? Exactly. Okay. So that for most Americans would be to see that graffiti would make them distinctly uncomfortable, and the idea that white privilege and the generally white or Caucasian dominant class is in some way or other influenced by the values of the Ku Klux Klan is something which most Americans would find an ugly idea, whether it's true or not, and certainly wouldn't see it as embeifying the word. But it is certainly figurative. The other problem, if we go back even to the case of to call a spade, what's a spade? What do you use a spade for? Oh, B2 people should know what a spade is. Any idea? You use it to dig. Excellent. To dig, not yes, to. Exactly. So a spade is an instrument that you would use to dig a hole in the ground, in the earth. Where do we get the word spade from? Any ideas? Can you think of a Spanish word that looks like spade? It is indeed, yes. It is a word for a type of cards, a type of a suit of cards. We have diamonds, hearts, spades, and clubs in English. Good, but can you think of a Spanish word that looks similar to spade? Exactly. So that's a bit strange. Do you know why we say spade for a digging implement, but you say spade for a sword? Okay, well, both words in fact come from spados in ancient Greek, which was the word for a type of sword with a very broad cutting edge. So something that looked a little bit like a cutlass, which is, if you imagine, sorry, oops, I spelled it wrong, cutlass. If you imagine your typical pirate or buccaneer, then they have a sword which has a very wide blade, and a sword with a wide blade in ancient Greek was called spados, and spados has went into Spanish to mean a just any old sword, and came into English to mean a digging implement which has a wide blade. So the Greek word divided, it maintained more meaning in Spanish than in English. But it went in separate ways. So even the expression that we use in English to talk about talking literally, to call a spade, in fact, we can show that that is figurative language because a comparison, an analogy was being drawn between a broad-bladed sword and a digging implement, a sort of shovel. So that illustrates the fact that in most words come from origins that are have different meanings and have been applied to specific contexts so that we can have an extra idea of what is going on. There is some type of analogy going on. And to illustrate this idea, I want to talk about the elephant in the room. What is the elephant in the room? What does that expression mean? Oops, that appeared. Yes. What does the expression "the elephant in the room" mean? No? It's a very popular expression in both British and American English. The Americans sometimes say "the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room." There's something people are avoiding talking about. Exactly. So it's what everybody is thinking about, but people are trying not to talk about. And of course, the elephant in the room potentially is COVID-19. So why do we say COVID-19? What's the origin of that term, COVID-19? Ah, we have somebody else has come. Who has arrived? Patricia. Hello, Patricia. Good to have you with us. Do you know the origin of the term COVID-19? Patricia. Hello. Or anybody else? Again, my problem is I don't know if you're writing a long explanation or there's just silence. Okay. So Patricia doesn't know. Good. Is that a no? Elena? Or are you writing? Nope. Alberto? Our last chance. Alberto. Okay, right. Well, COVID-19, where do you think the CO could come from? It is, in fact, an abbreviation. So it is COVID-19. Where do you think the CO could come from? Company? Collateral? Corona. Right. Coronavirus does something. Excellent. Right. So COVID is coronavirus and D, the D, is just, excellent, good, is just disease. Why 19? Why? Exactly. Very good. So it means coronavirus disease 2019. It was identified in December of 2019. Obviously, the world will always associate it with 2020, with 2020, but it was actually identified in December 2019, and that is why it has that denomination. So why do we say Corona? What does corona mean in English? We have lots of doors slamming. That's what it means in Spanish, Elena. What does corona mean in English? Don't worry, not a problem. When would you use the word corona in English? Apart from talking about Mexican beer, obviously. Exactly. Very good, Patricia. So, with the first word, which is being used figuratively to describe the form of the form of the virus, is a figurative use of the Latin word corona, which, as Elena correctly identified, means crown. So it is a way of describing the light around the sun. And that word corona in Latin comes from the Greek word korone with a K, which just means a curve. Yeah, a curve. So we have a specific use of the Greek word curve to mean a crown in Latin, and then we have the specific use of the Latin word to talk about an astronomical, I think you said, an astronomical effect around with the light around the sun, and then we have that being used figuratively to describe what a particular virus looks like because it has sticky things pointing out of the sides. So we can see there the progression of how language is used figuratively over the centuries. What about virus? What does virus mean originally? Any idea? If you don't know, write no, because then I won't waste time. If you're writing an answer, then that's wonderful. One no, two noes. Patricia? Patricia's writing an answer. Patricia's not writing an answer. Okay. Virus is a Latin word which means poison. Presumably, particularly venom in the most contexts of the ancient world, the poisons that they used were natural poisons, so were venoms. And so we've taken the Latin word for a poison and used it for this particular French what? Not poisson, not fish, no. Poison as in a venom. Something which is venomous, something which is toxic. Toxic, yeah. We know French here. Don't worry, we will never have any French here. That's completely under control. So there's this idea of something that you could use, something that's toxic that you could use for hurting somebody or killing somebody, and that has been transferred to this type of microorganism. Probably sometime in the 18th century, but I don't actually know when. What about disease? Can anybody work out the etymology of disease? Where do you think disease comes from? Can you break the word into constituent parts? If you wanted to divide the word disease etymologically, where would you divide it? Okay, excellent. It is disease. It's the opposite of being at ease. So, you have the idea, the normal idea that we associate with easy is something that is, in some sense, facile, something that is not difficult. But easy can also mean comfortable. So if you are comfortable, you are relaxed, you are at ease, as Elena mentioned there. We talk about things like, oops, if I could spell correctly. Oh, God. We talk about an easy chair. An easy chair is a comfortable chair, like a big armchair or a sofa where you are comfortable. It's not because it's in any sense facile or whatever. It is easy in the sense of being comfortable. So the idea behind disease is discomfiture. It's the idea that something that makes you uncomfortable or something that is inconvenient. Of course, there's quite a jump from that to an illness, but that is the origin of the word in that particular case. Okay, so we can see that even within coronavirus, we have lumped together little bits of astronomy, bits of toxicology, and words related to comfort. I don't know if there's an actual science of comfort, but anyway. Okay, what I want to look at now is just half a dozen or so of the words that have become buzzwords. Do you understand buzzwords? Does everybody else? Anybody understand buzzwords? Well, a buzzword, exactly, a trendy word. That's very good. That's a good way of describing it. A buzzword is a word which is new or newly popular and everybody is using it. So it's a word that suddenly everybody is using it because it is part of the Zeitgeist or it is part of the current conversation in society. So, buzzwords in the past might have been things like mobbing, which you pronounce variously, but things like that, things that suddenly become very popular. And of course, the world is really only talking about one thing at the moment, which is COVID-19 or coronavirus. So those terms in themselves are very much buzzwords. But another buzzword which has become, which is you will find a lot in English language contexts, is this: cabin fever. I want you to try and think about where we might get the expression cabin fever from. Have any of you ever seen the expression cabin fever? One no, two no's. Do we have a no from Patricia? Oh no, I finished my tea. Any idea, Patricia? No, right. Okay. Well, cabin fever is one way of describing the irritability or the nervousness that people feel when they are shut up indoors. So it's very possible that any of you and all of you have in some moment over the last couple of weeks felt irritable or nervous because you cannot go out, you can't go about your normal lives. And the reason that you are feeling like that is just because you are confined at home. You understand that concept? Good. Okay. I'll take yes from the other two as well, unless they give me a question mark. Right. So where do you think that expression might have originated? Why do you think we say cabin fever? Where might you come across the word cabin? Right, train cabins. We tend to talk about train compartments rather than cabins, I think. I don't know in American English, but I'm pretty sure we wouldn't say a train cabin, say a train compartment. Anywhere else you might see the word cabin? Well, there are two everyday situations where you're likely to come across cabin. One is in reference to where the people are in a plane. So we, for example, the way to refer to air hostesses and air hosts or air stewards and air stewardesses, nowadays it's more correct to talk about cabin staff, because the cabin is where the passengers on a passenger plane sit. And of course, we also talk about a cabin on a ship. And I think the cabin on a ship probably is the origin of the cabin on a plane, in fact. So your cabin is the part of the ship where you sleep, etc., I think. Don't know, I haven't really been on a ship. So both of those words are being used actually, in fact, metaphorically. Where do you think the origin of the word cabin is in English? Cabin looks a little bit like a Spanish word. Cabina. Okay, it's a word that looks very similar to cabina, but it's not cabina. Well, the origin of this word, in fact, originally comes from the type of very small wooden building that people used to live in the United States and especially in Canada when they were, especially trappers, people who were killing wild animals for their fur, to collect their fur. They would tend to live in log cabins, so live in little huts made of wood, made of logs. So, what do you think cabin fever could refer to? Yeah, sort of, more or less. Basically, oh, hello, we have Francesca or Francisca. Sorry, Francisca. Good to have you with us. And I think we may have somebody else. And Carmen. Ah, so good to have you with us as well, Carmen. What we're talking about, Francisca and Carmen, is how, in from one perspective, all language is figurative, and we're doing that, we're discussing that through the buzzwords, through the newly popular vocabulary that has appeared thanks to the coronavirus. So when people were trapped in sub-zero temperatures in the winter in North America, especially trappers and people like that, they had to spend long periods of time in their cabins without being able to go outside because it was too cold. So they would warm up this small space, the hut or the cabin where they lived, and they would have to spend probably months without really going outside just because it can get very, very cold in the parts of the United States and Canada, where people were trapping animals for their fur. And of course, if you are in that type of situation, people can become very irritable and they can even go completely mad. And so cabin fever can describe what can happen to people who are working in a lighthouse, for example. If they are working in a lighthouse and there's bad weather and they have to spend 10 days or something without going outside, they can get pretty crazy. So under that particular scenario, the COVID-19 is being compared to a long, hard winter. Is that a good comparison? Do you like that comparison with the situation you're living in, or living through, sorry? Do you feel that you are trapped like a trapper in the early history of North America? Kinda. Okay, fair enough. Okay, another way, probably more popular these days in the United States, ironically, is for somebody to go stir crazy. Have any of you seen the word stir crazy or to go stir crazy? Anybody? Okay. Well, this is a word which etymologically it's absolutely impossible that you guess, but it is still quite interesting from a Spanish perspective. Stir crazy comes from a Romani word. Do you understand Romani? Which people traditionally speak Romani? Do you know? Who traditionally speaks Romani? Exactly. It comes from a Gypsy word, which was stardo. And stardo in Romani means imprisoned. So if you are confined because you are in prison, in Romani you say stardo. And ultimately stardo comes from the Latin word stare, which is where you get the word estar in Spanish from. So it comes from the Latin word, which means to stand or to be. And in this case, it means to be confined, to be imprisoned. So according to that little metaphor that is encapsulated in that expression, being enclosed because of the COVID-19 virus is like being in prison, and people can become irritable or even go crazy because they feel like they are in prison. Do you feel like you're in prison? Not really. That's because you're allowed to go out to take the rubbish out. But apart from that, it seems a little bit. I think it probably depends on the space that you are able to live in. We live in different spaces, and some spaces are much smaller than others. Okay, well, I'll ask you now an easy one. That was a very difficult one. Does anybody know the origin of the word quarantine? A lot of people are talking about quarantining. If you read any piece of news from an English language source, they will talk about self-quarantining somewhere along the lines when they're talking about this. Where do we get the word quarantine from? Okay, it comes from 40 days, definitely. It is actually a word from Venetian, so the language, which is to some extent a variety of Italian, that used to be spoken in the area around Venice. That may help you to remember the origin. Does anybody know what specific context quarantine appeared in? Exactly, very good. Quarantine is a word that originally appeared in relation to the bubonic plague, what is also called the Black Death. In the 14th century, when the plague first appeared, one of the sensible measures that was taken in Venice, which of course was the place where the plague entered Europe, really, was to say that any ship that was coming from the Orient, coming from the east of the Mediterranean, had to wait 40 days to unload its cargo and to unload its passengers on the nearby island. So that those people who were ill would die, and and those people who were not ill would have demonstrated they were not ill, or they would have recovered. So that's why we get the idea of quarantine. And it looks very possible that our confinement at home could reach 40 days at this rate. We're certainly going to reach 28 days. We will see if it reaches 40. Good. Okay. So, does that do you think that the current situation is comparable with the situation with the bubonic plague in the 14th century, from 1347 onwards? Is it comparable? Okay, our medicine and hygiene is way better, but our interconnectivity is much more intense. We live much more close together. The level of potential panic, I think, is possibly comparable. Have you seen these people in America who have been drinking fluids for cleaning fish tanks and killing themselves in places like Phoenix, Arizona? Have you heard about that? Because supposedly one of the chemical agents that Donald Trump said was he had a hunch he had a hunch that this chemical compound was a good oh, this is something completely different. Sorry, go away. Sorry, messages appear. And that is not helpful. Go away. Right. I don't want to see messages. Stop sending me messages. One of the chemical agents that Donald Trump said he thought would be a solution also appears in a liquid that is used for cleaning fish tanks. And apparently, there has been a run on eBay in America for this particular disinfectant. Appalling situation. Also, I mean, the other potential comparison here might be in the long term, the bubonic plague was partially responsible for changing European society. I mean, it changed the relative importance of different classes. It changed the demographics, and it was one of the elements that caused the end of feudalism. Do you think this this illness and our reaction to this illness could have a significant impact on our society, or do you think we will be business as usual by this time next year? People, you hope people will have learned to wash their hands properly. That's one good thing. Maybe also people will have learned to that you cannot have a healthy society without a good public health system. I think some people seem to be finally coming around to that idea. Okay, another expression that is popular, especially in the United States, is shelter in place. Shelter in place. Has anybody seen Shelter in Place? It is an imperative. Shelter in place. Has anybody seen that? I think you are not choosing to read about or listen to news in English. You should be trying to incorporate English into your daily lives, which means watching the news every day in English and reading some English language newspaper like El País or something. You can follow your Spanish news in English with the El País's online English newspaper. Or presumably other newspapers have a similar option. I don't know if there is an El Mundo in English. But the El País in English, the English is very good. It's very well translated. Can anybody interpret that? What does the verb to shelter mean? Find refuge, good. To take refuge, we would tend to say. So, what does shelter in place mean then? No, yeah, okay. To shelter in place means to take refuge or to look for refuge exactly where you are, to not try to go somewhere else. Under what circumstances do you think, especially in America, there might be a police alert to shelter in place? Why do you think the authorities might tell the population shelter in place? Can you imagine circumstances where the police might give that order? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Well, this is a typical order in the United States in two situations. One is when there's a hurricane, and the other is when there's a blizzard. Do you know what a blizzard is? You know the word blizzard? Exactly, a snowstorm. In British English, we would tend to say snowstorm. In American English, since 1880, they use the word blizzard for some reason. Okay, so the situation in those two contexts is that obviously when some type of storm front, like a, a hurricane or a blizzard, is approaching, that is not coronavirus, if you have enough time, then the best thing to do is to run away, to try and get outside the area that's going to be affected. But there is a point in time where you do not have enough time to escape. And so it is the best advice, rather than being trapped in your car, is to find the nearest possible secure place and to stay there. And that is the idea with shelter in place. Is that a good metaphor? The idea of comparing COVID-19 with a blizzard, with a snowstorm, or with a hurricane, with a typhoon. Do you get the feeling that it is something that is passing over one country, one area after another, and you have the intense effect, and then things will dissipate quite quickly? What tends to happen in a blizzard or a hurricane? Or not. Is the analogy between, I'm not sure if it will be quick, but after the first peak, it will go down. Okay, good. Again, the advantage in the future is that presumably we will have some sort of vaccine. Good. Okay, I mean, there's supposedly some hope that when summer comes, with all of the ultraviolet rays of the sun, the effect should be reduced a little bit, as it is with flu and things like that. We will see. None of the terms that I've given you so far are, in fact, the most common situation that we use to talk about our current confinement. In English, confinement is a word that we would probably associate more than anything with the last stages of pregnancy. We talk about a woman's confinement when she stays in bed and doesn't tend to leave the house in the final, I don't know what it is or what it used to be, maybe a couple of weeks before before actually giving birth to a baby. So we don't tend to talk about confinement to talk about the coronavirus, because obviously there is not a great deal of similarity between the pandemic and people having babies. Do you know what word does tend to be used? What's the most popular word to talk about people being confined to their homes in this situation? Begins with L. L-O. L-O-C. No? Last chance. L-O-C-K. Almost. Exactly the opposite, in fact. We talk about lockdown. Have you not seen the expression lockdown? to be on lockdown, for example. Very, very common in the news, talking about this, both in Britain and in the United States. You can't really watch a news report from CNN or from the BBC without hearing the word lockdown every day. Where do you think we get the word lockdown from? Can anybody imagine where the expression lockdown might come from? What does lock mean? What does lock mean? Well, you know various meanings of the word lock. I know you do. Certainly those of you who have done English Literature 2 or are doing English Literature 2 know several meanings of the word lock. What can lock mean? Close with a key, good. Or block. Or block. Block it out. Okay, well, it's more the idea of a lock being a mechanism to close with a key so that people cannot get in or come out. So where do you think the expression lockdown could come from? Any idea? Okay, well, lockdown actually comes again from prisons. In this case, to be on lockdown or a lockdown refers to when there has been a riot in a prison, when there's been a situation where the prisoners have attacked the prison guards and possibly tried to escape, and there's been a disturbance in that sort of sense, then the standard reaction of the authorities is to enclose all of the prisoners in their cells for a period of time and not allow them to come out. I think both as a punishment and as a way of isolating them so they cannot plan any type of counterattack or repeat the problem of the riot. So, I mean, I think that's probably a particularly inappropriate metaphor for referring to our current situation, since in the case of prisoners organizing a riot, they have done something wrong, we would understand, whereas we have not done anything wrong, even though we are confined to our homes. But lockdown is a very, very popular expression. Another expression that's used in America often to refer to people sheltering in place, that type of thing, is to hunker down. Any of you seen hunker down? You might see a news headline, something like "the population told to hunker down." Does that ring a bell? Lovely phrasal verb. I'm not sure if it's in your phrasal verb lists in your wonderful grammar book, but it's certainly a phrasal verb that's used a lot at the moment. Well, to hunker down is literally to crouch down, which you may also not recognize. But if you are still on your feet, but you flex your legs so that you are in a lower position, you're not exactly sitting, you are crouching. You're in a situation where you are lower. Then that is to crouch down, or exactly, but I'm trying not to say it in Spanish. Good. So if you are the complete, is it incomplete? I always said decomplete. Oh, I will improve my Spanish as a result. Okay. If you're in that situation, then you are lower down, it's more difficult to see you, etc. And in fact, to hunker down comes from Scots. Scots is a language that is spoken in Scotland. It is often confused by people with Scots Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic, which is a completely different language. Scots is a variety of English which is spoken by quite a high proportion of people who live in Scotland. Scots Gaelic is a variety of Irish, which is spoken by a very, very small number of people who live in the northwest of Scotland, in the Highlands and Islands. So Scots is, if you like, the dominant language, a variety of English that is spoken in Scotland, and Scots Gaelic is the Celtic language that is spoken in especially the Lowlands, especially the east and south of Scotland. But anyway, the word comes from a time from the 18th century when the Scots were busy rebelling against being part of Great Britain, as they, or indeed we, often do. I am more Scottish than English, so I'm allowed to joke about these things. When people were involved in a guerrilla war against, when the Scots were involved in a guerrilla war against the English, this position of being encunclias, being hunkering down, was obviously, it's quite a good tactic. It means you're a smaller target to be shot at, and it means that probably you are out of sight. So as guerrillas, and I don't mean gorillas, I mean guerrillas, which we actually pronounce the same, but in a guerrilla war, you hunker down in that you wait in an expectant state. So again, there what we have is idea of this illness being compared to some sort of guerrilla war. How does that sound? Is that a good metaphor? Do you feel that we are at war? I mean, a lot of people, like the French president, has said that, I think, about 10 days ago, France is at war with the coronavirus and things like that. Are these war metaphors good? Sounds post-apocalyptic, yes, a little bit. But should leaders be comparing this situation to a war situation, or is it different? Do you like the bellicose, the belligerent vocabulary of some people, or is it unhelpful? Okay, and then anybody else? Do you have an opinion? I think actually Pedro Sanchez yesterday said something about being on a war footing. Most of the world leaders are using this metaphor one way or the other. Whether they should or not is another question. Okay, two more, and we will call it a day. We will finish. The place where the disease is spreading most quickly, and the place where the disease is most active, is being called a hotspot, or it is being described as the epicenter. Have you seen either of those expressions? Being used in this context. Okay, exactly. So good. The metaphor here is talking about earthquakes. Do any of you know the precise geological meaning of the two terms? They're not exactly the same. What is a hot spot? Well, a hotspot is a place where magma is actually coming out of the ground. The expression was invented in the 1960s in relation to Hawaii. I will write that because nobody spelled it correctly. Nope, I'm not spelling it correctly. Not with an X. The expression comes from Hawaii. There are places in Hawaii where the lava, where the magma is coming directly out of the ground, so where you have lava appearing spontaneously from underground, that is a hot spot. And of course, the problem is that where Hawaii is, the Earth's mantle is particularly thin. So those Hawaiian islands are created by, well, a crater is the idea of that is the shape, but a crater can be completely dormant. So there can be no volcanic activity. An active crater is an example of a hotspot. Yes. But there doesn't have to be a crater. It can just come out of the ground more spontaneously. It's related to crater, but not exactly the same. What about epicenter? Any idea? An epicenter is more directly related to earthquakes and less to volcanism. The epicenter is the point on the Earth's surface immediately above where an earthquake started. So earthquakes obviously tend to happen deep underground, and the actual point in of the tectonic plate where the two plates are moving over each other on the Earth's surface may be a long way away. But the epicenter is the point vertically above the point of friction that causes the, or the point of release of friction, really, that causes the earthquake. So, again, we have here two geological metaphors for what is happening to us. And in fact, another geological metaphor is outbreak. Have you heard, any of you see the film Outbreak? With Dustin Hoffman, Estallido. It has half of the world's population has seen this film in the last month, because apparently, in theory, this film has a lot of similarities to what is happening now. Good. So Francisca has seen it. Outbreak originally referred to a volcanic eruption or to these. Yeah, monkeys and Ebola in that case. But in terms of the way it spreads and things, people have said there are comparisons. I don't know. I can't remember. I saw it 15 years ago or whenever it came out. Anyway, the word outbreak originally referred to either a volcanic eruption or the beginning of a war, in the same way as Estallido can talk about the beginning of a war or a volcanic eruption. So again, we have that war comparison. Or here, a geological comparison. Again, how valid do you find that geological comparison? Does this feel like an earthquake, a tsunami, things like that? Some type of geological catastrophe? Or is it different again? I mean, one comparison that some people are making is, for example, to compare the lack of reaction of really pretty much every government in the world. China was to some extent slow to react, and then reacted very efficiently, but then Italy was slow to react, then Spain was slow to react, then France was slow to react. The British certainly have been very slow to react and are catching up now. And of course, Donald Trump is still being quite slow to react in America. They have compared that situation to people seeing the sea recede, like in the 2004 tsunami, and being a little bit like rabbits who are caught in the headlights and just not reacting until it's too late, really. So there can be, I think, some type of geological comparison. Okay, well, so I mean, the point of all that, if you like, is just to get you a little bit to think about how the human mind works with language. We don't tend to find it easy to accept new situations, and so we try to compare new situations with existing situations, and we've seen how this is compared to situations of bad weather, either having to spend winter confined or having to hide from a blizzard or a hurricane. It's being compared to geological problems like earthquakes or volcanic eruptions. It's being compared to war or to guerrilla warfare. It's being compared to being in prison and being confined in prison. I don't know if I just mentioned that. It's being compared to other types of pandemics or epidemics, for example, the bubonic plague. Each of these different situations adds a level of understanding and also adds a level of misunderstanding to how we deal with the insecurities that it provokes, the psychological isolation that it provokes, the panic it potentially provokes, the irritability it provokes, and what we can actually do in terms of trying to protect ourselves. But that may all be a little bit laborious, but my objective was for you to think about how language works and how really everything that we say is actually caught up in previous ideas, and those previous ideas resonate through the modern words that we use. Anyway, my intention was that hopefully that would be a little bit thought-provoking. Certainly, if you do choose to read about this problem in English, or you try to watch the news in English, a lot of this vocabulary you will almost certainly come across. I can guarantee you will come across most of it. And I certainly do encourage you, if you have a little bit more spare time, one of the useful things that you can do for your English is to force yourself to try and watch a news bulletin every day. That the cumulative effect of that, not once or twice, but over weeks and months, is very, very positive for your English. And I mean, since this is news, it is a subject that you can talk to people about when you're chatting online, or you can talk about afterwards when it's all over. It will give you vocabulary. It will help you to be able to express yourselves better, and even in fact to be more knowledgeable about what is happening. There is a terrible tendency, I think, for everybody to be seeing this problem only from the perspective of their own countries, and the fascinating thing is how so many mistakes are being repeated from one country to another, but also how we can, I think, all learn from one country to another. So I will leave you to go and clap. The clapping has started. So we will stop the class there. thank you for listening in. Have a good Easter. And as I was saying at the beginning of the class, before most of you arrived, I will be looking at the forum every day. So please ask your questions there about the course or anything else. And I will post some more material and activities for you to do if you choose to. But I mean, above all, if you have any doubts arising from the course, then then I will be happy to answer them on the forum. And I would look forward to seeing you on the 13th of April. Clap, 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 clap. Not for me, for the health workers. And see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, one second. Oops. Do this first. Bye-bye. Getting in there.